Hey friendos, it's Danny B. So here's the thing. I have tried recording this episode quite a few times. I've tried editing it quite a few times, and I keep running into issues. So what's going to happen today is that I'm going to go through my outline and all the points that I want to talk about in a way that will hopefully end up with as little editing as possible, because I'm really tired and upset at this point. But today I want to talk about Coraline by Neil Gaiman, and I'm very excited to talk about it with you guys. I've been wanting to read Coraline for a very long time, and I finally did it, and I just want to share that with you guys. So before we get into the book and everything, a couple other things that are not exactly related to this episode, but I wanted to let you guys know. Retrostalgia is now available on Podchaser, which, if you haven't heard about Podchaser, I'm going to say the same thing that everyone else has been, which is that it's basically like the IMDb for podcasts, but you can also rate and review podcasts there. You can create lists. If you have a personal account, you can create a top 8 and feel like you're back in the MySpace days, which is actually pretty fun. But you can also listen to episodes on Podchaser, and you can leave reviews for each individual episode. I think it's actually really neat, and I hope that this website takes off, because I'm really enjoying the platform so far. It's really engaging and working well for me, and I hope it works well for other podcasts, because I'd like to see Podchaser just become bigger. And this isn't any sort of paid advertising or anything like that. Hashtag not sponsored. But I like Podchaser. So if you have a favorite podcast, maybe go see if they're on there and see what Podchaser is about. Secondly, Retrostalgia is now available on iTunes, which is so great. I finally got added to iTunes because I took it upon myself to go through the grueling process of downloading iTunes and making an account and going through the podcast process to submit my RSS feed myself. Although I started this podcast on, I think it was August 26th was the first episode, I still hadn't been approved by iTunes, so I thought it would probably go faster if I did it myself instead of waiting on Anchor to do it. Anchor is still great. I will still be putting my podcast up on Anchor, but I wanted to take the matters into my own hands, so I did. And Retrostalgia is now available on iTunes. So if you're one of those Mac people, or someone who has Apple Podcasts on your phone, or whatever the purple icon is, if you could just take like 30 seconds out of your day to log on, leave me a review, even if it's just stars. I don't care what the review says. You can say you like ponies. You can tell me your favorite flavor of ice cream. Just something to get me on the charts so more people can discover my podcast, because I want more people to be able to enjoy the content that I'm putting out. I think my idea for this podcast is pretty unique. I don't think there's another podcast, to the best of my knowledge, that is doing exactly what I'm doing. So if anyone is interested in hearing a millennial's opinion of a bunch of stuff from the 80s and beyond, probably even some stuff from the 90s, I want them to be able to find my podcast. And yes, this podcast is explicit. I am an explicit person. And as I told someone the other day, I don't believe in bad words. I don't think that shit, fuck, damn, or anything like that are any different than any of the other words that are currently coming out of my mouth. The only exception to that is, of course, racial slurs, which you should never say. But in general, I don't believe that any words are typically worse than words that you use already. I just don't understand the separation of your regular vocabulary and cuss words. It just doesn't make sense to me, and so I'm not going to separate myself as a non-explicit podcast, because I want this to be a conversational podcast, like a lot of other podcasts are. I'm not following a script right now. I'm just trying to talk from my heart, and I am an explicit person. I already said that. That's just how I talk. I say like a lot and and all the other good things that I've been editing out of my podcast, but I want to try and be more genuine with you guys because I think that this is something that I want to continue pursuing, making podcasts, and I already have other ideas for other podcasts, even though I don't really even have the time to work on this one right now, but I'm doing my best with what I have. I'm using my phone as a microphone. I have shitty Audacity as my editing equipment and a computer that I purchased from my place of work for $100. But you know what? I'm making a podcast. I'm doing it. And I'm using a free software. Let's talk about Anchor. Are you still here? Are you still listening? Hi, it's me. I'm Danny B, and we're gonna do a podcast today, like I mentioned earlier. Gonna try and be a bit more myself now. So, other than like this first scripted line I'm about to say, the rest of this will be my train of thought as I discuss Coraline. So I just want to say that Coraline is a book published by Neil Gaiman on February 24th, 2002, which is nearly 8 years after I was born. At this point in my life, I was in first grade, I think, and so I might have been a bit too young for this book, but I was reading at this point, which back then I remember being very proud of that. But I don't know if kids read earlier nowadays or whatever. I'm not old, but I'm not up to date with what's going on with elementary school kids, so whatever. But in this point in my life, I was probably reading some young children's books. I was super into the Junie B. Jones series, which if you didn't read that as a kid, it was great. I really enjoyed it, and I was so proud of Junie B. Jones when she finally made it to second grade, y'all. I also read some of the books from, and I had to look up the name of the series because I did not know it. I read some of the books from The Adventures of the Bailey School Kids, which were the books like Genies Don't Ride Bicycles and Aliens Don't Wear Braces, those sort of like mystery things. Which also maybe tie into one of, if not the main theme of Coraline, which is that adults don't typically pay attention and don't really listen to kids all that much. In Coraline, it's very strong in the book, unfortunately, and it's from the very beginning to the very end. Everyone in this book who is not the other mother, created by the other mother, or some sort of animal, like any adult person in this book, because there are no other children other than Coraline. Any adults in this book do not get Coraline's name right, except for her parents. Everyone else calls her Caroline instead of Coraline, which I guess they're kind of similar, but I don't know how you work when someone introduces themselves to you, but whatever you introduce yourself to me as, that's what I'm going to call you. So if you introduce yourself to me as Chris, I'm going to call you Chris. If you introduce yourself to me as Coraline, I'm not going to call you Caroline because your name's fucking Coraline and that's what you told me to call you. If the next day you tell me that your name is Heather, I'll start calling you Heather. Your name is whatever you want it to be. In fact, here's a little secret, so we'll see who actually listens to this episode. My name is not Danny B. Danny B is a fake person that I have made so that I could feel a little bit more comfortable putting my voice and myself on the internet. When I first started this, I think like any other podcast, I wasn't really sure if I was going to keep doing this or if I was just going to put out one episode and be like, all right, cool, I did that, and kind of forget about it, which does happen with me about some other things, but I didn't really want that to happen with this podcast. I really wanted to keep it going, and I don't want to talk too much more about this because I said a lot about my podcast earlier. My point is that, yes, names, whatever you want to be called, that is what I will call you, and that also includes genders and all that jazz. So if you introduce yourself to me as Coraline, I'm going to call you Coraline. Unfortunately, Coraline's parents, although they're cool and work from home, which I would love to work from home one day. That's like the dream, the millennial dream, being able to just sit on my personal computer all day or just lay in bed with a laptop on my stomach. That sounds fantastic. I would love to work from home, like Coraline's parents do. Although they work from home, they don't really pay much attention to Coraline. She technically spends like all day with them, but they're working, of course, which I understand as an adult, but kids don't really get that, unfortunately. Being that her parents are working from home and the other adults in her apartment complex are strange and weird, Coraline ends up constantly bored, always asking her parents what she should do, and so she just ends up doing her own thing. She ends up going around exploring the apartments and the grounds around the apartment. She becomes very self-sufficient. Is that the right word? She kind of learns not to depend on anybody else, which is kind of sad. At one point, she actually asks her mom what she should do to have fun, and her mom says, "I don't care what you do, as long as you don't make a mess." In this one sentence, Coraline is hearing from her mom that, one, her mom doesn't care about her, and two, she cares more about the fact that she might have to clean up one of Coraline's messes. That is very depressing, that is very hurtful. And that's not something you should say to a kid ever, especially your own child. Take better care of your kids. Give them the love and attention that they need so that they don't grow up to be serial killers. Even though if there weren't as many serial killers as there are, then a lot of other podcasts would not exist. There's one point in this book in which Coraline's parents have been kidnapped, and so she ends up talking to a police officer who, again, doesn't listen to her. He thinks that she's playing some sort of game, and so he tries to, like, play along, but he just ends up completely ignoring what Coraline is saying, even though she's literally calling to report her parents missing. She's like, "My parents are not here. They have not been here for a long time. My parents have been taken." And he's just like, "Oh, that's funny. That's a cool game. I'm sure they'll be back soon." Click. He doesn't care at all. Which is horrible. But at the same time, he is a complete stranger to her. But at the same time, he's a police officer, and so he should have taken her a bit more seriously than that. The other adults in Coraline's life are the two older actresses that live below her and the crazy old man who lives above her. The actresses, anytime she goes to visit them, they don't really pay attention to what she's saying at all. They just kind of talk about whatever they want. They don't even notice when she nonchalantly states that she's now an only child because her parents have been kidnapped. They just kind of like go on with whatever they were saying and are like, "That's nice, Coraline." Though they do end up having a little bit more of an important role later, but for the most part, they don't really pay much attention to her. And then there's the crazy old man who lives upstairs with the mouse circus. Like, basically the only time that he ends up talking to Caroline... Fuck. The only time he ends up talking to Coraline is to relay to her a message from the mice that she's like in danger or whatever. And he makes a point to tell her that the mice are getting her name wrong. They keep referring to her as Coraline instead of Caroline. And how fucking sad is that? Mice are getting Coraline's name right when humans aren't. It's really pathetic, it's really sad, but again, it really drives home the point that adults do not pay enough attention to children, which is a very adult theme for this book, I think. I really appreciate this story existing to bring attention to that issue. It doesn't really seem to get resolved by the end of the book, unfortunately, but it's nice that it's there, I guess. So I'm kind of tired of talking about all the depressing parts of this book. So let's talk about my favorite parts, because I have a lot of favorite parts and I'm really excited to talk about them. One of the things that I was most excited about this book was all of the mentions of witchy stuff throughout this book.
From cover to cover, this book is dripping with magic, and I'm super stoked for anything that has magic in it. I consider myself a witch. I'm by no means an expert. I'm a little baby witch. At the beginning, there is a fairy ring of mushrooms that Coraline discovers, so maybe there's fairies nearby, and fairies actually come up later, and they come up later in the form of one of the ghost children, who turns out to be an actual fairy girl. Like, I don't think the word fairy is actually used to describe her, but she is literally described as having wings, and wearing cobwebs as a dress, and eating flowers. So if that's not a fairy, I don't know what a fairy is then. She's clearly a fairy, and somehow the other mother tricked her into staying and getting eaten, which says something because usually that's the opposite for fairies. The older actresses that I mentioned earlier, although they don't really pay much attention to Coraline, they do happen to realize that she is in danger, and so they give her a hagstone, which if you don't know what a hagstone is, it's basically like a rock donut. It's a rock that has a hole or holes in the middle of it that you can use to basically protect you. It has many uses, but the main thing is just protection and like helpfulness. If you want to learn more about it, I would strongly suggest looking it up. It's fascinating, but as I said earlier, I'm no expert on witchiness, so you'd probably be best to do yourself a good Google search. I don't remember the lyrics to this song, but Coraline does sing a song a couple times throughout the book, and some of the lyrics are "Twitchy Witchy Girl," which I like that it rhymes like that. I think that's really cute. And I would like to know the rest of this song instead of the other weird songs that Neil Gaiman puts in this book. A couple times the mice end up singing and it's just ridiculous. I do not appreciate that. I did not want it. I would have rather heard this Twitchy Witchy Girl song instead. But no, we get singing mice. So thanks. Another thing I really enjoyed about this book was all of the really good callbacks. I mean, there aren't a lot, but there are a couple that I did notice and I did remember, which are the bowl of fruit painting that's at the beginning of the story. When Coraline goes into the sort of off-limits room, there is a painting in there of a bowl of fruit, which is full of fruit. And then at the end, when Coraline is trying to escape from the other mother, the bowl of fruit painting is described as being empty with just like an apple core and some orange rinds in it, I think. I really appreciated that callback to the bowl of fruit painting. Although Coraline points it out and asks why would anyone want to paint a bowl of fruit, it's one of those things that I had completely forgotten about it once Coraline went through the door to the other mother's world. It went way back into the recesses of my mind and I didn't care about the bowl of fruit painting at all. So I was really surprised and really happy when it came up at the end. I was just like, oh, that's cool. That's neat. Like, it was good. I like that. So props for that one. There is also a well on the grounds where Coraline lives that's mentioned at the beginning of the book and comes back at the very end to play a very crucial role. It ends up being the way that Coraline actually saves the day. The other mother's right hand ends up following Coraline and everyone else back through to the real world when Coraline finally escapes. It's trying to get the key to the door because the door's locked now. Coraline sets up this fake tea party around the well, which was a pretty cool plan, I admit. It's one of those classic, like, oh, we'll dig a hole and cover it with leaves, like in Pokemon sort of thing. But it works a lot better because the hole is very deep. The well is very, very deep. It becomes a good final resting place for the other mother's hand, I think. Except that it doesn't seem like a permanent solution to me. I think eventually, technically, the hand could escape and the other mother can continue doing what she's doing. Unless, of course, maybe she dies from starvation at one point and then the hand will die and then everything will be good. But for now, it just seems kind of like an final thing. When the well was mentioned at the first part of the book, I did not expect for it to play such a crucial role for the ending of the book. So that was a pretty good callback as well. I really enjoy Coraline. She has a great sense of humor, which is still pretty little kid, but has some really funny moments. She made me laugh when her and her mom were out buying uniforms for Coraline's new school. She disappears for a bit, and then she comes back, and her mom's like, "Hey, where did you go?" And Coraline instantly makes up the story about how aliens abducted her, which her mom, of course, completely ignores, but I found it hilarious, and I was actually laughing at my desk at work and had to stifle my laughter because it was just so good when I first heard it. Her fashion sense is also good. I don't remember any of the exact outfits that she wears throughout the book, except for, like, she at one point wears some nice pants and a shirt that has stars on it, but everything else is described as pretty fashionable, I think. She has a decent eye for a kid. Neil Gaiman's descriptions of characters and of places was also really good for me. Most importantly, I really liked his description of the way the other mother looks and the way that it evolves throughout the book. The first time that she is mentioned, she is described as being very tall, very thin, having paper white skin, and her fingers just being like a bit too long. Throughout the book, every time Coraline sees her, she gets creepier and creepier, becoming more of what I can only assume is like her real self instead of trying to pretend to be Coraline's mother. Obviously, Coraline does not see her as her other mother, and the charade is up. There's no point in pretending anymore. His descriptions of food really made me hungry. Food is used, as I mentioned before, to sort of distract Coraline and to welcome her to the other world. And anytime food is described in this book, I could basically taste it. I thought it was something that I could completely picture in my mind's eye and I could smell it. And I just thought that, especially for a children's book, his description of food was really good. Her other bedroom is also super duper cool. I'm very jealous. Even though my bedroom is like the coolest bedroom I've ever had right now, it's still not as cool as the bedroom that Coraline has in this book. She has like birds flying around it or something, or airplanes, I don't quite remember. It's very like colorful and pretty and just an awesome kid's room. It made me think of that show that came on when I was a kid, like early 2000s maybe. This group of people basically would go into a house and find out this kid's interests and would end up completely redoing this kid's room for whatever their main interest was, you know, maybe like a whole room that was race cars or princesses or something like that. As a kid, I wanted to be on that show so bad, I can't even begin to tell you how insanely jealous I was of these kids. I think at one point I had to stop watching it because I was just feeling so bad that I didn't have a cool room or something like that. But anyways, Coraline's room was super duper cool and the description of it was awesome the first time that I heard it. He's also really good at making things sound creepy and unsettling, and that's coming from a 25-year-old adult, so that kind of means a lot, I think. The whole button eyes thing, I don't want to go too deep into it, but the whole button eyes thing is super creepy. I've always kind of been unsettled by it for personal reasons, and it's an interesting motif, is that the right word, that he chose for the other mother's world to have button eyes. Anytime that Coraline walks through a spider web or sticks her hand into something and it feels like spider webs, or just basically anytime spider webs are mentioned, I was really creeped out. Spider webs are just a thing that creep me out, honestly. Just seeing them anywhere really creep me out. They make me think of spiders, and spiders are the absolute worst. I love the design of spider webs. I think that they're super interesting. I just don't want it to touch me. at all. Just never touch my skin. I don't want spider webs on my skin. It is the worst feeling. I was talking about this on Twitter the other day. It is the absolute worst feeling having spider webs on my skin. One of the other really creepy moments that stuck with me was when Coraline was talking to the other version of the crazy old man who lives upstairs. I think it's when she first meets him. He asks her if she would like to come upstairs to watch the mice feed. And the creepy thing here is the word feed, because I think it is used to sort of imply something else is going on. It may not have been the author's intention, but using the word feed makes me think one of two things is going on. Either these mice are actually vampires and they want to suck Coraline's blood or something like that, or they like the taste of human flesh, and going upstairs to watch them feed would then mean either Coraline or some other dead dude having a swarm of mice all over them as they're being eaten. And I think that one's worse, actually. That one's really, really unsettling. That's what using the word feed makes me think of. So I don't know about you, but I would rather any form of eating not being described as using the word feed. The other mother, in general, throughout this entire book is just very creepy, very, very disturbing, but one of the things that really disturbs me about her is how manipulative she is. Just the things that she says to Coraline and the way that she treats her, it's all very, I want what's best for you, so let me kill you, let me sew buttons onto your face. It's just very weird and manipulative, really just is the word to describe it, I think. She tells Coraline that mirrors are never to be trusted and that all ghosts are liars, so there's some good life lessons for you. She also tries to distract Coraline with food. The other mother is also very smart, very cunning. She hides all of the kids' souls in just plain marbles, which, of course, anyone would be like, oh, that's just plain marble, that's nothing special. It would easily be overlooked. Thankfully, Coraline has the hag stone and does not overlook them, but most other people would, I think, and so I thought that that was very smart. The other mother also tricks Coraline into going into a cellar of the house so that the other father can hurt her, so that she can't leave. It's not really a trick. Coraline kind of knows what's going on, but the other mother does still convince her to go down there. So again, she's manipulating Coraline into doing the things that she wants her to do. At one point, the other mother also eats beetles, and beetles freak me out. I don't know about how you guys feel about them, but beetles freak me the fuck out. And I think that's mostly due in large part to the Mummy movies. If you ever saw The Mummy with Brendan Fraser, then you would know exactly what I'm talking about. There are several points where beetles come into the story in those movies, and specifically scarab beetles come into play, just swarming over someone and eating them whole. So anytime beetles are mentioned, I'm very much reminded of that, and that is not okay. I'm very creeped out by that. So mentioning the other mother eating beetles, not good for me, especially because it's the way she eats them. She pulls off all of the legs and then eats the beetle. So not only is she eating beetles, she's also torturing them. Isn't that fun? The other crazy old man is just very, very disturbing from, as I mentioned before, the point in which he asks Coraline if she wants to watch the mice feed, but also later in the story when Coraline has gone to his apartment to find the last marble, she tells him that he's just a bad copy of the crazy old man from her world, and his response to that is not even that anymore, because he's just a trench coat full of rats, basically. But that is like the best comeback line I think I've ever heard. That maybe gave me goosebumps. It was very disturbing. That's a line that I will remember forever, I think. The cat in this story is also an interesting character to me. He's not like super important to the story or anything like that, but he does have a couple good moments. He's mostly just an asshole to Coraline, but one of the cool things that he says is Coraline asks him his name, and his response is that cats don't need to have names. that humans have names because they don't really know who they are. I just found that super interesting. I need a thesaurus or something because I think I've said the word interesting, creepy, unsettling, like... I have like 5 words that I'm using to describe everything from this book. I'm sorry. That's just how I talk, and I'm trying to be more talkative, so you get repetitive, Danny. You better like it, I guess. As I mentioned, he's an asshole to Coraline, and he has some good one-liners. Another thing he says when asked about the other mother, they're talking about... Let me start over. When Coraline is talking to the cat about the other mother's world, why doesn't she go farther out instead of basically just having the house and like the grounds around it? The cat's response is that a spider web only has to be big enough to catch flies, which is completely true. The cat is also a decent enough cat that although Coraline is nice to him and he's an asshole to her, he doesn't ditch her at the end of the book when she escapes by throwing him at the other mother to distract her. So he gets a point for that. Coraline is brave as fuck, and I wish that I could be that brave. She tells the other mother that she's sick and evil and weird and not her mother, and for a little girl... I don't know how old Coraline is, but for a little girl, those are some strong words, and I applaud her for sticking up for herself. It's really, really good on Coraline's part. She also is selfless enough to go ahead and say that she's going to rescue the kids as well as her parents. She could just tell them the fuck off. She's just here for her parents, but she wants to set them free too, so there's another point for Coraline. She tricked the other mother into playing her game to find the ghost kids and her parents. So that's another point. She's also a badass when she's in the cellar being attacked by her other father. She notices that he only has one button eye. And so she decides that the way that she's going to escape is that she lets him lunge at her so that she can be close enough to his face to rip off his other button eye, which works, and he is blinded by this. That is scary. That is so fucking scary. And Coraline just does it without a second thought. I could not even handle being in that situation, much less pulling that shit off. So that's one more point for Coraline. Is anyone keeping track of the point system here? Because you really shouldn't. I'm basically like, whose line? The points don't matter. She does a really good job of escaping from the crazy old men when they have their back and forth, which was good. She also tricks the other mother in regards to where her parents are so that she'll be able to escape. She tells the other mother that she is absolutely certain that her parents are behind the doorway between her world and the other mother's world. She knows that the other mother will have to prove her wrong. She's learned that about the other mother's character. And the other mother does. She unlocks the door so that she can show her the parents aren't there, which was a really good trick on Coraline's part. This is where she throws the cat at the other mother and then escapes through the now unlocked door. That was so good and really exciting, and I greatly enjoyed reading that part of the book. It was very dramatic and well told, but also very, very brave of Coraline. As Effer mentioned, she uses the well to set up a fake tea party for the other mother's hand. That's pretty strong of her, I think. I don't think anyone can really argue that. At the end of the book, she says that she's not scared of school anymore, which I just found funny because I don't think anyone would be scared of school if they went through the shit that she just went through. Those are basically all of my favorite parts of the book. I also had like a couple small things that I wanted to mention, which was there's frozen pizza in this world. So that's great. The actress's dogs in the other world become these like weird jelly dog bat things, and I just thought those were really adorable, so I wanted to mention that. And the crazy old man's name is actually Mr. Bobo. Just gonna let that sink in. His name is Mr. Bobo, that poor old man.
Hello everyone. Let me tell you about the Apple for the Teacher podcast. I'm Anna Thomas, a teacher and your host. So you're probably thinking it's about reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? Well, think again. It's a fresh take on true crime, where you wouldn't expect to find true crime. In schools, yes, schools. You will hear tragic and shocking stories that I have uncovered in my own profession. You'll hear about murder, abduction, hijack, misconduct, student disappearance, suicide, kidnap and ransom, and much, much more. So if you're looking for something a little different in the true crime genre, then Apple for the Teacher is for you. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. So join me as I present People Behaving Badly, The Bad Apples. Looking forward to seeing you soon, but until then, remember to be a good apple.
Now that we've talked about basically all of my favorite parts of the book, we've gone on quite a long time, so I don't want to spend too long on the parts that I didn't like, so let's go through them pretty quickly. I feel like there's kind of some fat phobia in this book. The actresses, when they are old, they're described as old and round, and that's basically it. But when they peel off their skins, like I mentioned earlier, the actresses are now described as young and thin and beautiful. There are some other instances in which people are described as ugly or round or whatever, but it just made me uncomfortable as a fat person to read this book only slightly. It's much less uncomfortable than reading the Harry Potter series, so it's not that bad. I feel like this book was also padded quite a bit. It seemed like there were a lot of unnecessary bits mentioned. I didn't really think the school uniform part had to be in there, even though it did give me one of the funniest parts of the book. The whole rest of that section just seemed kind of unnecessary, except to further illustrate how little Coraline's parents seem to care about her well-being and happiness. You know, important things like that. I also feel that Neil Gaiman is a bit too detailed sometimes. Some parts of the book, he is very descriptive with a bunch of very short sentences back to back, and that doesn't really make for good reading or listening, even though it is a children's book. I didn't like how sad this book made me. It can get really depressing at some times, but I think that's kind of the point of the book, so I don't really want to say anything too much against that, but I think for a children's book, it's just a little too down. I didn't like spiderwebs being mentioned through this book, especially them touching you. At one point, Coraline finds a dead spider the size of a large cat. No thank you. Her mom calls Mr. Bobo the crazy old man who lives upstairs. Like, actually refers to him as the crazy old man who lives upstairs when talking to Coraline, which is why Coraline calls him the crazy old man who lives upstairs. Her mother never mentioned that his name was Mr. Bobo, and Coraline's a kid, so she wouldn't have thought to ask. I really disliked the idea of the whole separate room that had the hallway to the other world. It was just a room that had expensive and uncomfortable furniture in it. Why couldn't that have been like a playroom for Coraline instead, so she could be a lot less bored? Seeing as how little Coraline's parents care about her happiness in this book, that is kind of to be expected. And again, school uniforms are terrible. Please do not make kids wear the same thing. I don't think it instills any form of discipline into them. I don't think that it prepares them for the future. I think it's just a little cruel, and it forces kids to not be individualistic, if that's the right word. They become more uniform because, I mean, that's the word, uniform. They're less expressive. Overall, I would rate Coraline as a solid, please read this if you are into slightly spooky / creepy things. It really brings attention to the problem of adults not listening to nor paying attention to children as much as they should. Like I said before, unfortunately, this doesn't really seem to be resolved at the end of the book, so that kind of sucks, but at least the conflict of Coraline being killed is resolved, so that's good. But it seems like Neil Gaiman is trying to make the lesson in Coraline being that she should appreciate her parents more and be happy for what she has, and if that's the point of this book, then Neil Gaiman can suck my dick. I'm gonna take away from this book what I want to, which is that it's cute and creepy, and Coraline is now my best friend. Coraline is a very cute, creepy, interesting story about a wonderfully creative girl who deserves the world and will hopefully grow up to be a very powerful witch someday. So, now that I've taken the time to read Neil Gaiman's Coraline and recorded for, what is the third or fourth the fifth time, my analysis of this book, we're finally to the point where I have a recommendation for you. I want to recommend something that is also spooky and creepy for kids. You've probably already heard of it, you've probably already read it, but I want to suggest the Scary Stories to Tell in a Dark book series. These were a big thing for me in middle school. I was a loner in seventh grade. I had just started at a school in which I didn't know anyone. I had no friends, and everyone else seemed to already have friend groups, so I didn't know how to break into those groups at all. So instead of trying to make friends, I just read books at the library, and I came across the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series and thought that they were a great book series. I love this collection of short stories. The drawings at the beginning of some of the chapters and stuff will always stick with me, I think. They were very creepy, you know. It has a certain look to it, which is very disturbing and fits the stories. If you like spooky, creepy stories like that, if you like creepypastas, and you haven't read that series, please read it. I think there's also a TV show or something like that based on the books, so that's probably good. I can't really recommend it because I haven't seen it. I know there's at least a podcast out there called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, so maybe give that a try too. I don't know. But like I said before, absolutely read the book series. That is my recommendation to you this week. And that concludes this week's episode of Retrostalgia. My God, it took forever. Hopefully it won't take me forever to edit. So I hope that was creepy and spooky enough for you. If you have any suggestions or recommendations for the show, please email me directly at retrostalgiapod@gmail.com or use the contact form on the website you can find in the description. You can also follow the pod on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at retrostalgiapod. If you have some time, please leave me a review on iTunes. I worked very hard on this episode, and I hope it shows. If it does, please let me know. I would really like to hear your guys' honest feedback. Please also let me know what else you would like to see from this show. I have a couple ideas of some extra content to do. Maybe I will have some goals to do different things as we reach a certain amount of listeners, so look forward to that. If you like this podcast, then cool, thank you. Send it to someone who you think would enjoy it. If you hated this, also cool, send it to someone who will make fun of me with you. Either way, I'll see you next time for episode 6. Until then, I'm Danny B, reminding you to be kind. Please rewind. I'll see you again soon. Bye!